Welcome to Human Potential at Work, the show where we explore social impact, inclusion, and empowerment of everyone, including persons with disabilities. Your host is Deborah Rue, CEO of Rue Global Impact, and co-founder and chairwoman of Billion Strong, an identity and empowerment organization designed to bring billions of voices of persons with disabilities together. To join the global community and to donate to the cause, visit billion-strong.org. That's billion-strong.org. And now, on to the episode.
Hi, everybody. This is Deborah Rue, and this is Human Potential at Work. Today, we're going to talk about assistive technology, but timepieces, too. It's very important that technology be used in a way that allow us to stay independent, so it's very exciting. So my guest today is Hongsoo Kim. He's the founder and CEO of E1 Timepieces, and I'm really excited to talk to him about what he's doing because I think it's very cool. So welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to share my experience.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how this started and how you created this company.
Sure. So the company name is E1. So E1 is short for everyone. So we have created a wristwatch that can tell time by either touch or sight. We started about 10 years ago. It was a class project at MIT. And we wanted, we started after having found that there are not good watches for people with vision loss. You know, it's either the talking watch or they call it the Braille watch, but, you know, it's a regular analog watch, and you can open the cover glass to touch those hands. But those hands are fragile. And when you touch them, they can move quite easily. So, and of course, when they move, they don't know, you know, how much they're moved. So, it's very difficult to use. And those two options are the only, options they had. So we said, well, it's time to make a better, solution.
Mm-hmm. Build a better mousetrap, as we say, right? So, and I have friends that use that watch, but that's a good point. I never thought about you could go to touch it and accidentally shift the time, and then you're not going to have accurate information. So, yeah, that is interesting. So tell us more about the watch that y'all created at MIT.
Yes. So I can go through what we, how we started and more in detail. By the way, if I'm going too long, feel free to cut me and ask me any questions. So, it started from the interaction, my interaction with my classmate who was blind. So one of my classmates, he was blind. I happened to sit next to him a couple of times. And somehow it continued throughout the semester. And whenever he needed to check time, he had to, bother me. He had to poke me and then ask. It kept happening and again and again. And that's when I questioned, you know, why does he have to keep asking me? Right? And I looked at him and he was actually wearing a watch. After the class, I asked him, okay, I see you're wearing a watch. How do you use it? And it turned out there's a talking watch. And basically, you press a button and it speaks out the time. I thought it was, oh, that's pretty convenient. And then quickly, I realized that they can't use it when there are people around them in public spaces, right? During the class, during the meetings, because it speaks up, you know, time out loud, is audibly disruptive. And everyone knows that you're checking time, so it's embarrassing. So he couldn't use it. So I asked him, well, is there any other options? And the next day he brought me this watch, which I showed just a moment ago. But he couldn't use this because he doesn't have really good sense of touch. So he has a trouble using this watch, and it breaks quite easily. So and then I asked him again, well, this is 21st century, and it got to be some other options too. And he said no. So I was very surprised. And of course, there's the iPhone. They use iPhone a lot nowadays, but it's also audible display of the time. And they can be wearing the earphones, but, you know, for them, it's very important, you know, to be able to hear, you know, what's happening around them. So, you know, having the earphones plugged into their ears all the time is not a very good solution. I searched, I did more research, and then it turned out that very surprisingly, he was right. There are no other better options out there. So that's when we, you know, said, well, it's time to make one. So that's how we started. But when we first started, that's something that I can go more into details later, but in the beginning, I was building something that I thought they needed. And with a lot of incorrect, you know, misconceptions and stereotypes about, you know, people with disabilities. So, for example, the biggest mistake that I made was, you know, the first thing that came up to my mind was Braille. Okay, I'm making something for the blind, and it has to be something with Braille. So our first prototype was a watch with Braille display. So four Braille dots. And then, you know, at the time I was at MIT, so it wasn't so hard to, you know, put together a team with those amazing MIT engineers. We spent quite a bit of time and resources and capital into it. After we made the prototype, we did the user research. At MIT, there are once a month, about 50 to 60 people who are blind, they get together and they talk about the technologies or products they could use. They are a really amazing group of people. And then, so we went there to present our prototype. And then at the first meeting, I still remember very clearly. So as soon as we said, well, we are developing a watch, Braille watch for the blind. And their first question was, okay, that's cool, but do you know how many of us can read Brailles? So there were about 50. So I said, well, but I never really thought about it because my automatic assumption was if you're blind, you read Brailles. So I said, well, if not all of you, maybe, you know, 90% of you can read Brailles. But of course, you know, it turned out he said, about 90% of us cannot read Brailles.
Right.
So, that was very surprising. I mean, if I did a little bit of research, it's something that's available widely.
Right. But still, it's very common. People think mm-hmm. everybody that's blind reads Braille. They don't mm-hmm. realize it's definitely not true. And at the Braille, people learning Braille is actually down. So, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. many of them, they lost their sight at the later stage of their life.
Correct.
So many of them didn't get to develop good sense of touch. So basically I was making something that only 10 to 20% of the target audience could use. So that was extremely, embarrassing. And then another person, you know, raised his hand and he asked, okay, then, what's the color? What's the size? You know, what's the material? And the next set of questions all about the aesthetics of the watch, which again I didn't really thought about. You know, it's very embarrassing to admit that, but you know, I thought, okay, if you're blind, maybe you care about the functionalities more than, you know, the looks and the designs. But they cared a lot more about the looks and the designs than the functionalities. So there was strike two. And then another person, you know, raised his hand and he said, well, I can read Braille, so maybe I can try. But his question was, is that only for the blind? Right. So this time I thought they would like my answer. My answer was yes, it's specially designed for the blind. Because, you know, nowadays we like something like limited editions, something that is, you know, custom built for us. So I thought they would like that, but they didn't. You know, they really didn't want to use any more products that are labeled as, you know, only for the blind, because it really separates them from the other.
I agree.
And, you know, there are like zillion, you know, similarities between, you know, the sighted and the blind. And there's only one difference, just one difference. And then we focus on the one difference so much, right? And they said, well, we want to use something that everyone else likes to use as well. If we want something, we want to be able to just walk into a regular store and find something that works for everyone instead of having to, you know, go to the specialty stores. So that was strike three. And then literally after that meeting, we were so discouraged. And our prototype, we didn't get to use it anymore. But, you know, after a couple of days, they contacted me back saying, well, if you are still very, you know, interested in building something for us, you know, we'll help you. You know, why don't we work together? So I really appreciate that. So that's what we did. We, you know, put together a team again, but this time, you know, not just the MIT engineers, but the designers from RISD, the architect from Harvard, and then, you know, people with all different backgrounds. And our goal was this time was to make a watch that doesn't require vision, yet it's not just for the blind. It's not just for the sighted. It's for everyone. So that's why we named our the brand E1, which is, it is for everyone. It's short for everyone. So that's how we came up with this design. So instead of
design,
instead of the traditional, conventional hands, minute and the hour hand, so there are two ball bearings rotating.
Wow, that is so
cool. And this is the minute, and the one rotating the bottom is the hour. So you cannot, you know, if you're sighted, you can check time by looking at those, you know, the watch. Or, you know, I use this a lot when I'm embarrassed to look down to my wrist to check time, you know, like
right.
You know, during the meetings or interviews. So it's very awesome. Oftentimes it's convenient for the sighted, you know, as well. And we wanted to make something that is aesthetically, attractive to, you know, people who are sighted as well, or the blind altogether, regardless whether you're sighted or blind.
Right. You wanted to make watches for human beings that every human being could use and enjoy. You know, I'm with that group. I don't want to wear an ugly, I'm not saying your watch was ugly, but I don't want to wear an ugly watch. I want to, you know, I do care about that. And it's, I know that you and I have talked about, you've used the term inclusive design. And I think it's so powerful, your story, because you certainly were trying to solve a problem, but often designers forget to actually bring in the community of the people they're trying to design it for. You learned a lot of very valuable lessons doing this. And I, of course, because the field I'm in, know that a lot of people that are blind don't read Braille, especially, as you noted, they lose their eyesight, which is about 80%, after they're born. If you're born blind, then, you know, maybe you'll go to school and learn it, but there's also not a guarantee that that happens either.
Correct.
So even though we put Braille on all of, like, the elevators and the ATMs, the having Braille on actually can help multiple people. It's not just for people that are blind, but I just think it's a powerful story, and I appreciate that you're honest about that story, because this happens all the time. And often it happens, and when we point out, well, that doesn't work for us, it's like, you know, it's like an aggravation, which is why I wanted to bring in the terms inclusive design, human-centered design. And also, you know, I think it's a very important point that you were trying to make a difference, but you realized you had to bring in more of the users and architects and things like that, so you could actually build something that worked, you know, for all humans. Because it's a very cool watch. I imagine also that people would be fascinated by it. So then it becomes a conversation piece, which is also cool because it really is cool. So tell us more about, you know, what the next steps were, because now, of course, creating a prototype is great, mm-hmm. but getting something to market, being an entrepreneur, yeah, those are also fun, challenging times.
Yes. So you're absolutely correct. You know, building a product versus building a for-profit business out of it is two different stories. That was one of the biggest challenge. And to be honest, again, we struggled a lot. And, but luckily we, were able to recruit someone who was like very talented. It's not just a marketing branding guy. He's just like very sincere. He always applies a very sincere approach. His approach and principle was, if you're making something for someone, we really have to understand, you know, what they like and, you know, what is the underlying problem that we are trying to solve, right? We should be able to show people, you know, not just what we made, but why we made it and how we made it. And, after a while, you know, it was quite clear that the underlying problem is, you know, the lack of inclusive design awareness. And why? It's not that, you know, all those engineers and designers are trying to exclude people with disabilities on purpose. No, not at all. It's just that they don't have enough interactions. And again, they have, you know, mostly they work under very limited, you know, time and resources pressures, limitations. So they have to work with, you know, all those stereotypes and misconceptions, you know. And it keeps reinforcing those stereotypes, you know, more and more. And so we wanted, so, you know, really, in order to solve the problem that we are trying to tackle, it has to be, you know, our product has to be able to connect people together, you know, people with disabilities and people with, you know, all different abilities and disabilities. So, you know, I like the phrase, you know, disabilities, you know, is people with, you know, differently abled, you know, people. And, you know, people who are blind, you know, so many people that I met, they have amazing talents. They have developed amazing, you know, talents in something else. And so if we embrace those, them, we can be very creative and innovative. And in the beginning, so we more need to be more storytelling company to really connect people together. That's why we named our watch, our timepiece, after Bradley Snyder. So this timepiece is called the Bradley timepiece. And Bradley Snyder, he was the bomb diffuser. He was a naval officer. But in Afghanistan 10 years ago, he lost his sight completely from the bomb explosion. And after about a year or so, he was fully recovered, but he lost his sight completely. And he tried to live his, you know, life again. And then it was difficult. It was very challenging. And it was not because he could not see anymore, but it was mostly because how people treated him. He really didn't like that, you know. So he just wanted to show that he's the same person and he can do amazing things. So he, you know, he competed in the Paralympics, in London, he won, you know, gold medal, two gold medals and silver medal as well. And in the following Olympics, he set a world record. And so his interests and our interests aligned well together. So we wanted to have a story on our products. So when people use our products, they hear about the stories, and then it helps the breaking the stereotypes and misconceptions.
I agree. And I will tell you, I work with a lot of people that are blind, and some of the things they have to deal with. And I was talking to somebody on the show, and she said, I wish I only had to deal with my muscular dystrophy, but I actually have to deal with society disabling.
Yes, correct.
Society disables us because he has to navigate the world a little different. But even the story you told about Bradley, you know, it's like, I am still here. I still have lots of abilities. And identity is a very interesting topic. That's one reason why we've created BillionStrong.org to just focus on talking about the identity and our lived experiences having disabilities, whether they're visible or invisible. Mm-hmm. But I just think that's such an important point. And also inclusive design. You know, inclusive design should just be a staple of design across the board from now on. But it's not. And I know that you learned a lot about inclusive design, but why is inclusive design not a nice to have, but essential to design now?
Yeah. So I mean, to me, inclusive design is, correct. It's not something nice to have. People think that, you know, assistive technology products, you know, it's an addition to something we already have. They try to build, they think that it's something different, additional, you know, to be added to have the functionalities. But no, if you just include them from the beginning, like I said, you can come up with something much more innovative. You can be much more creative, yet it benefits everyone. They think that assistive technology, something, you know, those additional functionalities, it's only beneficial to people with disabilities. But no, for example, you know, our timepiece, a lot of the users, their feedback is, I was very surprised to see how I can benefit from wearing this watch during the meetings or, you know, during the dinners, you know, with in-laws. And still, it looks good. It looks, so they like it as a design piece. So when we include, and another really good example that I always bring up is Siri. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they didn't come up with that idea just to help people with, you know, vision loss, right? They wanted to I was not in their, you know, design or development teams. I don't know for sure, but, you know, always Apple's approach, you know, is like very inclusive and, you know, they wanted the series, you know, it helps people, you know, who are sighted as well. You know, if you're driving or if your hands are all occupied, you can just speak loud and then you get all the informations and, you know, so that's a perfect example of the inclusive design approach. You don't separate them. You don't separate, you know, okay, let's try to build something for the non-disabled people. And then let's see if you can add something additional to it so that, you know, additional people, you know, people with disabilities can benefit. No, they don't take their approach. From the beginning, they encompass all, you know, people with all different backgrounds and abilities and disabilities, and they try to make products that works for everyone. And always it turns out to be a better solution for everyone. It's innovative. It really pushes to the next level of technologies.
I agree. And I think also that I'm a big Apple user. And the reason why I'm a big Apple user is because I find their products much more usable, much easier. It's actually sometimes, I'll be honest, I'm 60. And as I started using technology very, very early. Mm-hmm. I've always loved technology, as did my father before me. But so I learned how to do things the hard way, mm-hmm. because I was programming in DOS, and I'm, you know, very early on. Mm-hmm. And so when I first started using Mac products, I was a little confused because I didn't understand how to do something easy. So I remember talking to my son at the time and saying, how do I cut and paste? And he's like, you hold down a button. You just touch it. I'm like, what? So I'm not used to thinking of the most easy way to do something. Mm-hmm. And so it's been interesting. But I will say also with Apple, we were told as a society it was impossible to make a touchscreen accessible. And we really needed touchscreens to be accessible, especially people with vision loss and blind. But it wasn't possible. And then Apple did it. So it's like, I guess it is possible. So Apple, I'm a big fan of Apple. I'm just a big fan because they really do, as you said, seem to be very committed to designing for human beings, no matter where we are. And, you know, they are like everybody else. They have their challenges. But I also want to make a comment about assistive technology. I think assistive technology is important, but sometimes, and I think this is a good example of what you've done, sometimes with assistive technology, it feels like the designers are more focused on the medical model of mm-hmm. what it is to be a person with a disability, as opposed to a social model. Because the social model is, like you said, with Bradley's a wonderful example. He lost his sight doing a really important job, but he's not broken. He is just having to use his other senses in other ways. Mm-hmm. I have a good friend of mine that's blind that he had a coworker say to him, I'd rather be dead than be blind. Mm-hmm. And now how is your coworker supposed to even respond to that comment, first of all? But it's ridiculous. We've got to stop treating people like they're not valuable because whatever, fill in the blank. But the reason why I wanted to tell your story is it's a very powerful entrepreneurial story. It's a story of inclusive design. It's a story of listening and learning. And I think that you were right. Inclusive design is essential. And if you're not doing it, which so many aren't, and if you're not including the users that you're trying to create something for, you're not going to be as successful. And it seems to me sometimes you should just know to do all this stuff, meaning include the user that you want to, you know, talk to people. But I don't still always see that happening in the design world. So I think there's an opportunity for designers to, you know, follow your lead. But I know that I've already kept you on for 30 minutes, but I want to talk to you just for a little bit more. So have you gotten your product in stores now?
Yes. So mostly online.
Okay.
So on our website, We have a couple of offline retailers, such as SF MoMA store.
Okay.
Yes, and but mostly on our website. Our website is accessible, so okay. People with vision loss.
People forget that. They forget to make their website accessible. But it's got to be accessible to us, so bravo. So how many models, how many different models do y'all have now?
So we have about five, six different models of two different sizes. And we have, you know, many different kind types of straps as well. But our all our watches are unisex design.
Okay.
We also didn't want to kind of reinforce the stereotypes on the gender. So, you know, like female, you know, they like to wear small, you know, like rose gold or
pink. Right.
So we wanted to break that stereotype as well. So
good.
Yeah, all of our
watches. So I would like to see your watches in Walmart and Target. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd like to see them in the big ones, because I know that if I saw your watch, mm-hmm. I would be more attracted to your watch. In the first place, I love the story behind it. And I love to buy something that has a powerful social impact story. But I also like thoughtful design, and your design is very cool. And it has these terrific benefits to me. Like you said, if I'm, you know, with somebody that I don't want them to know that I'm checking the time, you know, it's practical for all of us. So I'm hoping that any brands listening to this could see there was an opportunity. I could see an opportunity for a brand like Tommy Hilfiger, you know, taking your watch and, you know, creating a band. There's so many opportunities to support work like yours that are actually, and people might say, this is just a watch, who cares? Well, he just explained to you why it is important. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't always listen to your cell phone tell you the time. So it's, you know, I don't want to constantly be reminding everybody that I'm the one person in class that's blind. I mean, that's embarrassing. So I appreciate the work you're doing for that reason as well. So a couple of last questions. I want you once again to tell everybody how to find your website, how to find you on social media, but I also want you to tell the audience, because I know a lot of corporations listen to this and a lot of individuals, how can we as a community support what you're doing? Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. So our website is www.eone-time.com. So that's eone-time.com. It is accessible. And then our social media channels, mostly Instagram and Facebook. Our handle is eone, E-O-N-E.
Good. And very consistent branding. And are you working with any other people like Bradley?
Yes. So also our next product that we're developing is a desk clock.
Oh, cool.
But the same concept. We are developing it with people with vision loss. And we are working with Christine Ha. I'm not sure if you know of her.
I do. Yes.
So she will be the next spokesperson, and we'll name the product after her. So it's not 100% confirmed yet, because we are still developing, but it will be called Christine.
Okay. Wow, that's so cool. That's so cool. And have you had any of the large blind organizations get behind it? I know there's, you know, Royal National Institute on Blind, mm-hmm. the American Foundation of the Blind, National Foundation of the Blind, Federation, I think, of the Blind, but AFB. So I'm just wondering, have those organizations gotten behind you?
Yeah, so we've we had worked with them some years ago, and especially Royal
RNIB.
Blind. Mm-hmm. They have our products on their shop.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Excellent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So the last question, what can we do to help you?
If you can help, just spreading the word. You know, they don't have to buy our products. You know, if you can just hear, you know, our stories and, you know, what's going on in the world, that could be very helpful. You know, just the lack of awareness of inclusive design is something that we really need to fix.
I agree.
Again, there are really a lot of amazing designers and engineers out there, who pay good attention to this matter if they know, what's going on. It's just that they're not aware of the reality.
Right. That's why we need to tell stories like yours. I know I programmed for years. I didn't like it, but I did it. And when I was programming, I was creating inaccessible websites because I didn't know about accessibility. And I approached a gentleman that was blind, and I told him about what I was doing with my new company at the time, Tech Access. And he said, "Deborah," he said, I can't even get anything on your website. I was like, "What?" So I didn't know. So then I knew. So it was like, yeah. So the word, that was 20 years ago, but still, there's still a lot of people that don't know that they're accidentally designing a bunch of people out of, using their products. So
Correct. That's
another reason why I appreciate your story. So, thank you so much. We want to continue to follow your progress. I actually want to own one of your watches, so I need to go out and look, only because it's a really cool design. And I love the story. And I love that you're supporting the community. So thank you so much for whatever you're doing. Reminder to the audience, it's e1-time.com. And we'll make sure we put it in the descriptions. But thank you so much for being a guest today. And
thank
we will
you very
say
much for having
to the
me.
Audience, and you stay on for a second. So, bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Human Potential at Work. To learn more about Rue Global Impact, visit RueGlobal.com. And to learn more about Billion Strong, an identity and empowerment organization designed to bring the billions of voices of persons with disabilities together, you can join the global community and donate at billion-strong.org. That's billion-strong.org.